Hello and welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show presented by Yahoo Sports. My name is Ryan Ballingy. I'm the author of the Devil Ball Golf blog over on Yahoo Sports. You also may know me from my personal website, Golf News Net. We've been doing this podcast, the 19th Hole Golf Show, since 2001, on and off with periods where we haven't done the show whatsoever, even for years at a time. But at the tail end of 2014, we decided to commit to doing the show on a weekly basis to explore important topics in golf. And we're really excited in 2015 to bring this podcast to the Yahoo Sports audience. So we welcome you who are new listeners, and of course all of you who have supported us over the years on iTunes or other services. We're excited to start a new golf year with you, if not a new golf season. You can email the show, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ryanballingy, twitter.com/ryanballingy. You can find Golf News Net at golfnewsnet.com and Twitter and facebook.com/golfnewsnet. Now, this week kicks off the resumption of the PGA Tour schedule. We have those fall series events, or what was once known as the fall series, ending with the OHL Classic in Mayakoba. Charlie Hoffman was the last guy to win on the PGA Tour. And all of the winners from calendar 2014 are invited to compete this week at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions at Kapalua's Plantation Course. Not everyone took them up on the offer. Of the 38 players that qualified, 34 decided to come to Hawaii, which I'm not exactly sure why you would turn down that trip, but you can ask Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, who's going to be a dad soon, which is his excuse, Martin Keimer, and Justin Rose, who all decided not to make the trip to Hawaii for this season-resuming event. It's a fascinating one. Because it's a limited field in part, because it feels out of place in part, this is the second season for the PGA Tour's wraparound schedule concept, where the new year begins directly after the FedEx Cup playoffs end, and you have several events that linger in the prior year, and then you have this small break, a month or so break, that leads into a new season of official events. They all have full FedEx Cup points. It really is still a work in progress, and this tournament used to be the season opener. It used to be the one that kicked off everything, and now it feels a little strange here in January, 7-8 events into the season, and I don't think it has quite the same luster that maybe it did even 15 years ago. Certainly when it made the move to Hawaii in the early 2000s, it just kind of feels a little bit out of place. But a trip to Hawaii is a trip to Hawaii, and I think for a lot of guys it speaks as a great reward for a nice year that's been had for them. So anytime you win on the PGA Tour is a huge accomplishment, whether you've won 79 times like Tiger Woods has, or whether you've won one time like so many of the guys in the field, making this past calendar year the year of their first PGA Tour win. So Kapalua was a really interesting course, the Plantation Course in particular. It's the only par 73 course on the PGA Tour. It's the only one they're going to play all year long. The fairways at the Plantation Course are ridiculously wide. There's basically not that much rough to speak of. You have to either hit a terrible shot off the tee to miss the fairway, or trade winds have to pick up, which the course is susceptible to. And we saw that a couple of years ago when Dustin Johnson walked away as the winner here. The event was shortened to 54 holes because the wind was so strong, players literally couldn't swing the golf club and expect to hit the ball forward. So it's possible for the winds to wreak havoc on this tournament and really play into how guys approach tee shots and approach shots to enormous greens. And by enormous, I mean bigger than your house, bigger than three of your houses. They're that big in terms of square footage. And that makes accuracy especially important, because on a lot of classic courses, if you miss the green, you find yourself in rough, or you find yourself in a bunker, you find yourself in a position where you can chip, where frankly, with a decent lie, a lot of the PGA Tour guys kind of salivate. They know they have a good opportunity to get it up and down. But if you're hitting consistently 75, 85, 100-foot putts to try and lag for a two-putt par, it adds up after a while, becomes difficult. So making sure that you're extremely accurate with your approach play, despite the misleading size of the target, the green that is, it's very, very important. And so we're kind of trying to figure out who's going to start the season off well, who do we like. We talked about this in our fantasy picks heading into the week. I think you've got to like Matt Kuchar He's been in the top 10 in three of his last three starts at Kapalua. He seems to like the place. I think Bubba Watson's going to be really the fan favorite this week, whatever you think of Watson. He seems to have an affinity for Kapalua. He seems to like it. I think he likes that it's so wide. I think that he likes that it offers so many opportunities for imagination. It allows him to have an advantage, not only as a really long player, but also a player with the ability to fly the ball pretty much every which way. And there are not that many players in the PGA Tour that can do that anymore on command. He's got a decisive advantage in that regard. And so I think he's a guy to look to this week. I think a guy that a lot of people are going to be interested in, at least somewhat quietly, is Sangmun Bae. Sangmun Bae won the Fries.com Open for a second PGA Tour win in October. And everything seemed to be going right. Posting top five finishes. He's playing the best golf of his life. And then all of a sudden over the holidays, we get this report out of South Korea that there's a chance Sangmun Bae could be conscripted into the Korean military as part of the nation's mandatory two-year serving period for men between 18 and 35. Bae has been working off of a travel visa from Korea for the last several years, and there are a number of rules around keeping that travel visa, being able to extend it. One of those, as his legal team is trying to fight this battle for him in South Korea, is that you become a permanent resident of another country. He's done that, and he's held that here in the United States, and that you don't go to South Korea for more than half of the year, which he didn't do that in 2014. And so for him to be denied the opportunity to continue his golf career, especially playing as well as he is kind of ridiculous. And I'm sure that there's some cultural or legal or other explanation for why this is all taking place now, and it may ultimately turn out to be a scare for Sangmun Bae. He may well not have to return to South Korea at the end of the month and may well be able to continue his PGA Tour career as advertised, but hopefully that's the case, and hopefully he doesn't run into any additional issues. But he still has basically a month to play PGA Tour events without the worry of defying the law. And again, he could continue to defy the law. It's not like this. I don't assume the South Korean government is going to go seek out Sangmun Bae and force him into a boot camp. They really don't have that power, especially with Bae as a permanent resident of the United States. However, that would mean a big change in his lifestyle, where he wouldn't be able to go to his home country, wouldn't be able to play in PGA events, and there are some that the Korean players do play each year. Typically at the end of the calendar year, they go and play while the PGA Tour is off its schedule. He wouldn't be able to do that if he made that decision. And I think he wouldn't really be able to represent Korea in the Olympics. I mean, he might be able to. I don't know the rules on that, since golf hasn't been in the Olympics in 112 years. But right now, Sangmun Bae is ranked highly enough in the official world golf ranking in the top 85 or so that he would be in the Olympic tournament in 2016. And so if he can kind of maintain this status for the next more or less a year and a half, he'd be in the field. And interestingly enough for Bae, were he to be able to win a medal of any kind in the 2016 Olympics, in the Olympic golf tournament, he would not have to face military conscription. He would be exempt from it. And that would save him 2 years of his best golfing years. He wouldn't have to spend those in the military. KJ Choi's done it. He's done his. And obviously he's in his 40s, so he doesn't have to worry about that. Fulfilling it, dealing with it, there's no ramifications of it. He didn't even really make the leap to play significantly in the United States until he had done it. This is a different case, and the world of golf is different now, where every player around the world wants to come and play on the PGA Tour for the money, the world ranking points, the opportunities it affords. So waiting until you've done your military service doesn't seem really like all that great of an option. Seems kind of like a waste of time, especially considering what Rory McIlroy has done in his early 20s, what Jordan Spieth has done, he's not 22, what Ricky Fowler has done, he's approaching his late 20s, he's 27 almost. So it's a different circumstance and a different time, and I hope it works out for him. I think there are a couple of other guys you really have to be interested in this week. Jason Day is one of the other highly ranked players in the field. He's in the top 10 in the world. And he won last year at the WGC Accenture Match Play, but then went into this kind of downward spiral with injuries that impacted more than half of his season, and then came back for the FedEx Cup playoffs and was brilliant, just playing brilliant golf. He had to withdraw from the BMW Championship, but other than that, played some excellent golf. And I think as you look through some of the preview pieces we've done heading into this calendar year, you got to look at Jason Day as a guy who really has all of the goods to make the leap in becoming a major champion. And if you look at the results that he's had in the majors, particularly in the Masters and the U.S. Open, he's basically squatted himself into the top 10 of those major championships for the last 3 or 4 years and said, come beat me. And there aren't many people who can make that claim or have his record in the U.S. Open or the Masters over the last several years. He feels comfortable in those spots and he feels comfortable in those courses. He doesn't seem as comfortable in the Open Championship or the PGA Championship, but that may come with time. I think his best opportunity to win a major championship this year is in the first two. And so if he gets off to a great start, feels like he's playing great golf, then you have to really like his chances. And I know we're still 4 months away from the Masters, and it's hard not to think about it, however, because the storylines and the players who are just going to be so intriguing heading into this Masters are almost endless. I mean, the obvious headliner is Rory trying to complete a career Grand Slam. And you have Tiger, who hasn't finished outside of the top six when healthy for basically the last decade at the Masters. And there's Phil Mickelson, who's a three-time champion, who had his worst year in over a decade on the PGA Tour last season. And were it not for a runner-up finish at the PGA Championship, it would have been a total junk season. And then you have Ricky Fowler, you have Jordan Spieth, you have Bubba Watson going for a third out of 4 years. You have Adam Scott, who has really one last crack at the majors, playing with the anchored putter in his bag. And how long that'll continue. Will he do it at the Masters? Will he get rid of it before then? Being a dad, will that change how he approaches the game? He's got a new caddy, because Steve Williams is now semi-retired or retired, depending on who you talk to. So there are just so many things to think about even down the line. I mean, everything impacts what's going to happen at the Masters. Now, obviously, no player this week, none that wins, will contribute extra to the Masters field unless you're a player in the opposite field event. Any player who won a regular PGA Tour event in 2014 from the last Masters to this upcoming Masters gets in the field, but no one, except for a few guys, could actually add to that field. Jeff Ogilvy is one of those guys who's someone you really want to look at this week, because the last time he played in this event in 2010, he won. It was the second of back-to-back wins at Kapalua for Jeff Ogilvy. He never had a chance to go for the three-peat. In 2011, he had a hand injury, had to withdraw, and hasn't won since on the PGA Tour. Think about that. For a guy who was the 06 U.S. Open champion and seemed on a trajectory to get at least a second major, he's fallen a long way, and he's been very candid about it. He's talked about how he's felt at times that maybe this was getting away from him and that he was going to go do something else. He was going to go home to Australia and quit the PGA Tour. He talked this year about the possibility of simply taking the rest of the year off. And he just happened to win it at Tahoe and salvage a season and reinvigorate his career. He wasn't all that great the rest of the way, but all it really takes is one to kind of salvage a career. And we'll see with now a full year and a lot of opportunities ahead for Jeff Ogilvy as a PGA Tour winner last season, what he's going to be able to do with it. I think he'll get off to a great start here. It's hard not to remember that you won in the place two times, even if you haven't been there, what will be 5 years. So I really like what he could potentially bring to the table this week. Zach Johnson's the defending champion. He's getting no love at all. And that's somewhat deserved. Yeah, he won this tournament last year, but beyond that, it was kind of a disappointing campaign for Zach. I think the other reason you're going to not hear his name too often in previews for this tournament is that he doesn't really have all that great of a record at Kapalua, other than the win. A couple other starts, he's finished near the bottom, or at least the bottom half of the field. He doesn't really have an affinity for the course, and it's not like how Steve Shricker feels about the place, or Dustin Johnson feels about the place, guys who aren't even in the field. It's just not going to happen. So I would be surprised if Zach Johnson did really well this week. And the other guy I think that's worth a look is Jimmy Walker. Jimmy Walker played so well at the Ryder Cup. really represented himself in the U.S. well. And that Ryder Cup appearance came 7 months after his last of three PGA Tour wins a season ago. Hasn't won since. He's boasted a ton of top fives, a ton of top 25 finishes, as my friend Rob Bolton pointed out for the PGAtour.com preview for this week's event. However, he hasn't won, and this is his opportunity to get a crack at Kapalua as a rookie at this tournament, because all of his wins were last year. So it'll be interesting to see if he continues to be the top 10 machine, kind of Matt Kuchar Jr., so to speak, or he kind of goes back to the mean a little bit. And then after this week, the PGA Tour stays in Hawaii, goes to the Sony Open Hawaii, which is a completely different tournament. Full field, a lot of guys who are 50-plus, shorter course, Wailea's Classic. It's a birdie fest. Just ask Russell Henley, who's as streaky as they come in the field this week, too, because of his Honda win. It'll be very interesting to see who sticks around and what they do the next week. I always find it intriguing because of the difference between Plantation Course and Wailea Country Club. So that's kind of what we're looking at this week, heading into the first tournament of 2015 for the PGA Tour. We've got South Africa, the South African Open, on the European Tour. Ernie Els is essentially the host of this event now, and has said he's still got a lot of juice in him, but that he's also come out and said really the only tournament he cares about winning until he retires is the Masters. And he really hasn't been all that close since getting passed by Phil Mickelson in the back nine of the 04 Masters. He really hasn't done much in it. The interesting thing when he said it, and I have brought this up other places, is he didn't mention anything about the PGA Championship. He's got two U.S. Opens, he's got two Open Championships. He does not care whether or not he wins the U.S. PGA Championship. I find that really fascinating, because it's a window into the motivation of a player. And I know that we in the media try to make all four majors seem equally important. We try to make them all seem like every player wants every major exactly the same, until it becomes abundantly clear that that's not the case. Phil Mickelson with the U.S. Open, obviously that's the one he wants more than any other. It completes the career Grand Slam, and he has a bazillion second place finishes, a record number, seven of them. So that's obviously his motivation. Tiger Woods will take any major because it gets him closer to Jack. You've got Bubba Watson, who really only cares about the Masters because you can see how he behaves at the other majors. He obviously has a special sense for that. Rory McIlroy wants the Masters more than anything else right now because it gets him into the history books. You kind of get the feel for what I'm saying. Ernie Els clearly doesn't want the U.S. PGA Championship. I mean, if you handed him the Wanamaker Trophy, he'd take it and wouldn't be mad about it. But that's not what he's playing for. So the first 3 months of this year are very important for Ernie. If he has a good Florida swing, I think you have to look at him for the Masters. I know that there's no correlation between the two at all, but it tells you about his form, tells you about his confidence, where his head's at, and I think that'll be a great indicator. So we'll get a sense this week of whether or not we should think about Ernie Els as a potential Masters champion, potential first-time Masters champion in April, or not at the South African Open. The other piece of information we wanted to kind of wrap up the show with is a report before we recorded this podcast this week. A golf.com report cites two sources, one that suggests something about a car rental and the other about a hotel stay. The Tiger Woods is going to compete in the Waste Management Phoenix Open as his season opener for 2015. That fascinates me. Woods hasn't been in this tournament since 2001. He finished fifth that year. Before that, he started in 97 and 98. Had an amazing hole-in-one in 1997. You remember the monochromatic blue outfit, the raising the roof, thousands of fans seemingly throwing plastic cups filled with beer into the air in celebration. Finished third in 1998, skipped a couple of years, and came back with a decent finish in 01. Hasn't played there since then, and probably it has everything to do with security. In 01... someone threw an orange while he was putting, threw it onto the green he was putting on. In 1999, a Woods heckler was in possession of a gun on the grounds of the tournament. Obviously, this is pre-9/11, mind you. Security was different then. Probably guys weren't even frisked or sent through a metal detector. But it was a different era. which hasn't been back in those 13 years. Now, so why now? Well, part of it is his schedule's open. The tournaments in the European Tours swing through the United Arab Emirates, the Dubai Desert Classic, which is sponsored by Omega, and the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, have both decided they're not going to pay the $3 million appearance fee that Woods commands, and he's been cashing in on alternately at those events since 2006. That's a lot of money. Wow. A lot of money. Some $20 million or so for Woods to cash in on those, just showing up at one tournament a year in the United Arab Emirates. Huge deal. Cut it off. We're done with it. Why? Because there are superstars who command for less money, who may give them way more bang for their buck, namely Rory McIlroy and some other young players, guys in their 20s, who might take a meager six-figure appearance fee to compete in one of their tournaments and do a whole lot more, like posing those goofy pictures that you see so often, that we tweet so often from these tournaments overseas. But that's to say that Woods has some room on his calendar, and there had been rumors that Woods would add an event to the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines, which is typically where he makes his U.S. debut, or at least he has since this money binge has happened in the United Arab Emirates. Now that that's not the case, he's got to pick a place to have at least a couple of starts in the month of January, and so it seems like he's settled on Phoenix. Part of that could be his great history there. Obviously, he's had three good starts there, three good results. The course, TPC Scottsdale, was renovated, redesigned, however you want to describe it, by the original designer, Tom Weisskopf, was unveiled back in November. There has been a lot of money invested into the property, not only in the course, but also the facilities. Part of that is the tour's agreement with the city of Scottsdale and Phoenix. So that may be one reason. The other is that the Super Bowl's in town. Super Bowl 49 is to be played at University of Phoenix Stadium across town. And so Woods may well have himself a ticket for the big game, regardless of who's in it. Obviously, his Raiders aren't going to be in it, but it is an opportunity for Woods, who is a big sports fan, to finish the tournament on Sunday, go to the game that night, and be able to enjoy the full experience. So that may well be a permanent thing for Woods, is maybe where he goes for a while. This could be the Phoenix-San Diego double. They're playing consecutive weeks this year. That's not always going to be the case, but they're playing consecutive weeks this year. So he's probably going to start back-to-back weeks, which is a rare thing for Woods, too. Fascinating choice if true. He could, of course, change his mind, or this thing could be absolutely false, but we're going to go with golf.com and suggest that this is true. And this will be a really, really interesting window into where Woods is. Is he trying to go old, kind of keep up with this new but old thing, and go back to his roots a little bit in terms of his early PGA Tour career and decide to give Phoenix a try again? If it doesn't work out, will he ditch that and go play Pebble, or, God forbid, the Northern Trust Open at Riviera next year in 2016? Who knows? But it is interesting that Woods is going to tee it up in the Phoenix Open for the first time since 2001. So we have that to look forward to in a little over 3 weeks' time from when we record this. The tournament starts January 29th. That'll do it for the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Either as a subscriber on iTunes, check us out there. You can also find us on Golf News Net Radio, on the TuneIn Radio app, or our website, golfnewsnet.com. Of course, we'll post the podcast every week, Devil Ball Golf, on Yahoo Sports, and we really thank them for the opportunity to reach all of you who connect through us that way. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy, saying thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.